Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. Honored to be able to air the second part of my exclusive conversation with the amazing Rob McCoy. The first part was aired a couple of weeks ago. You guys can go back in the archives and check it out. Should Christians resist government tyranny? Should we just abide by the rulers and do nothing? How should Christians interact with public policy? Should Christians be in favor of high taxes, low taxes? We discuss this and so much more. Before we get started, please email me, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Type in Charlie Kirk Show, your podcast provider. Hit subscribe. Give us those five-star reviews. You guys are going to love this conversation. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. Wow. That's all I have to say. I am looking at images of Minneapolis, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., cities all across the country, Atlanta, completely and totally in flames. Before we air the second part of our incredible exclusive conversation with Pastor Rob McCoy, one of my personal heroes, my personal pastor, and also pastor of Godspeak Calvary Chapel, Thousand Oaks, I wanted to dive into what's happening right here and right now. America's on fire right now. We are seeing great American cities like Atlanta and Minneapolis in particular completely and totally in flames. And the way the media is covering for this is disgusting. So in case you've missed it, which I don't know how you could possibly miss this news, rioters, not protesters, huge distinction between the two. Rioters have been storming the streets, burning buildings, burning down banks, and they even stormed the lobby of the CNN building in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, I do not wish for any journalist or for any news organization to ever have to come under threat or physical violence. However, it is awfully ironic that the very news organization that has been misrepresenting these individuals as protesters also have those rioters, not protests, storm the building of their very own news organization. It's just a awfully ironic full circle. We went into this two episodes ago where I said, based on all the footage provided, the police officer acted incorrectly, probably illegally, and this was murder. The police officer responsible has been arrested. It was the quickest turnaround arrest that I think we have seen in a case like this. And it was obviously done so quickly in an attempt to try to calm down these riots, which are not protests. And this begs a lot of questions. Do you burn down what you love? Ilhan Omar, who is the representative for a lot of this rioting and arson and domestic terrorism is happening, said, "We can always rebuild businesses, but we can't rebuild lives." Well, the businesses are an expression of the very same minority communities that you claim, Ilhan Omar, are under attack. If you care about black lives, why are you burning black businesses? And for those of us out there that really care about the rule of law, that go above and beyond to try to obey the laws and to try to be good citizens in our country, we're getting angry. We're getting angry that Christians were arrested for going to church and to take communion during the Chinese coronavirus outbreak. And terrorist thugs are allowed to burn down entire American cities. They burn down the College Football Hall of Fame. They burn down Targets and other convenience stores and take millions of dollars of merchandise. And I also just find it stunning how the Democrats quickly went from the lockdown party to the burn it all down party. Isn't it incredible how the Democrats immediately pivoted to you must stay at home to stay safe to you should get out in the streets and burn everything in sight. I guess those of us that have advocated for opening America now have had our wish fulfilled. think that should probably invalidate any of these politicians that are simultaneously calling for protests in the streets to also argue that we should go back and stay at home. So about Minneapolis, do you know Minneapolis has not had a Republican mayor for the past 59 years? Maybe it's time to try something different. And again, isn't it interesting how the Democrats and the media, they dropped all their calls for social distancing as soon as it came to the riots? These domestic terrorists and rioters even tried to penetrate and attack the White House. They were met with a pretty firm Secret Service that handled themselves exceptionally. One Secret Service agent was injured, but these rioters soon realized that once you're met with force, they turn away. I do believe that there was an injustice done to George Floyd. But you lose all moral license, in my opinion, as soon as you start to do more evil to try to right an evil that was already done. You extrapolate that to its furthest possible conclusion, everyone be rioting all the time, anytime anything ever bad happened to you. This is what makes us different than a third world country. And by the way, there's two other points here that I want to make that will probably be ignored by the mainstream activist press. Number one, do you ever think that maybe the lockdowns contributed to all this pent-up anger? This is the science behind the nuclear bomb. All this pent-up kinetic energy into a bomb to be released at one point. You tell people to stay at home for 10 weeks, that they can't go to Palm Sunday, that they can't go to Easter, that they no longer have a job, that they can't hang out with their friends. There's going to be a lot of frustration. They're not just mad about George Floyd. They're mad at rulers and tyrants and an entire power system that has been angry at them. But none of that justifies the violence at all. And by the way, I was accused on Twitter by saying that thugs was a racist term. But guess what? If you automatically assume that thugs just mean black people, doesn't that make you the racist one? There were people of every single race, including out-of-state white Antifa members that are thugs that were burning down these cities. The Democrat Socialists for America sent out an email that I exposed because I happen to be on their email list where they said we need to protect the uprising in Minnesota. Could you imagine if the Trump campaign sent out an email supporting Trump supporters or conservatives burning down businesses, attacking police officers, and setting police cars on fire? This double standard of justice has a lot of people wondering if we have a justice system at all in our country. Meanwhile, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn was targeted by our Justice Department. We can't even get the Federal Bureau of Investigation or the National Guard or our own law enforcement to arrest and to prevent the arson and the torching of American cities. What is Nancy Pelosi doing? Well, there's 41 million people out of work, and she just canceled another entire month of work for the House of Representatives. Why is Congress getting paid while our country is on fire and 41 million people do not have a job? Here's the second point that I want to make about these riots that I think people are missing. Isn't it interesting how the Democrats went out of their way to release all these criminals out of prison in the last couple months? Murderers and rapists and violent offenders were being released early out of prison. And as I am recording this right now, I'm watching on cable television, more and more riots start to form on the streets of Minneapolis right now. It's going to be very interesting to see as arrests hopefully and eventually start to happen when Governor Walz of Minnesota starts to actually get a backbone and a spine and is not worried about being called a racist and starts to arrest any criminal of any color in his city. You do not burn what you love. If someone is setting fire to a city, no matter what their excuse is, they do not have respect for that city. I'm looking on Twitter right now, and I encourage you to go back to the Tech Tyranny episode where I dive into this. But Twitter right now says, peaceful protests underway in Newark, Philadelphia, and other U.S. cities. Meanwhile, Twitter's own description on their Twitter biography, they have added hashtag Black Lives Matter. Twitter recently, in the last couple of weeks, has decided to go and become a full left-wing activist organization. They have decided to become a platform for people that want to mobilize and activate their anger and their revenge against the United States of America. I do wonder, though, if there's any correlation between these early releases of criminals and what's been happening in our country. I want you to imagine something. Imagine if these terrorists, and that's what they are, this is domestic terrorism, imagine if they were wearing Make America Great Again hats. Imagine if they had Trump flags. They would and should, if it happened, which it wouldn't, because we as conservatives would never do this. And for people that say, well, Republicans and liberals, we have both, you know, both sides have plenty of problems. I agree, both sides have problems. We do not have a domestic terrorism problem in the conservative movement. We don't have a burn a city down problem in the conservative movement. If these individuals were wearing Make America Great Again hats, they'd be arrested instantaneously. And I'm sure some of you might say, well, what about those horrible actions in Oklahoma City or all that? Those were not conservatives. And guess what? When those horrendous acts happen, everyone in the conservative movement disavowed, repudiated, and called for the quick and immediate conviction of the people involved in that. Whereas here, you have representatives giving license, permission, material, and backup to the domestic terrorists. Here's basically what's happened. The police have done something inexcusable. Everyone in the country I've come in contact with, in fact, I have not seen one person, except maybe a couple anonymous Twitter accounts that very well might be run by leftists to try to create a narrative that does not exist. I've not seen one person excuse what this police officer did and the police officers around him. Basically, everyone said that's murder. The media goes and they say the murder of a black man has the nation divided. And then people like me start to look around and say, no, there's no division. Like, this is actually murder. I don't know what you're talking about. Murder. Arrest him. Convict him. And then you have celebrities like Ice Cube and others starting to share fake information tying the killer to a Make America Great Again voter. Riots, do it again, repeat. For those of us that remember Ferguson and Baltimore, this is right out of the left-wing playbook. You even have certain individuals in the Minneapolis city government blaming white supremacy for this act of domestic violence because they're starting to realize that the optics are not that good of an entire city being burned due to the Black Lives Matter Antifa agreement. A third point, and we will do another podcast very soon on this. So please right now type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider and hit subscribe because there is a deeper, longer form podcast I will do in a couple days about how the left needs the help of foreign governments like the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and the Chinese Communist Party and people who hate America internationally like the Chinese Communist Party and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. They need the American left. The Chinese Communist Party and the Iranian Twitter accounts have been tweeting left-wing talking points to try to call for more and more chaos and division within America. The President of the United States, President Trump, acted quickly. He condemned the killing. He instructed the Justice Department to go after the individuals that did this. And Trump had nothing to do this. Why are the rioters and the domestic terrorists, why are they not going after Democrat governors? Why aren't they protesting, in the words of the media, Democrat police chiefs, Democrat senators like Amy Klobuchar, who was the individual responsible for not prosecuting and pursuing conviction against the police officer that killed George Floyd? Amy Klobuchar is responsible. Amy Klobuchar was previously running the office that went after Derek Chauvin, who was the police officer responsible for the death of George Floyd. Why are these Antifa members not protesting Senator Klobuchar's office or the Democrat mayor's office? That's because this is about destroying Donald Trump. Donald Trump tweeted some very factual things in the last 24 hours. He said that these are not protesters, these are domestic terrorists, and these are people that wish to divide us. If you cause this level of chaos and criminality, you should be met with force. I'm not saying you should be killed. That is not what I am saying. There's a lot of things short of killing other individuals that can be done to protect these communities. This is a movement of chaos. I do not support more loss of life. But equally, I do not support the absolute arson and torching of something that I love. I get sick to my stomach when I see an American city get set on fire. This is my country. This is what I care about. This is why I do a podcast every single day. And when I see these thugs, supported by the activist media, smashing windows, throwing Molotov cocktails, and yes, I guess they're wearing masks so we can't see their identity, but they're wearing masks under the excuse of the virus. How convenient is that for them? Now they have an excuse not to show their face. I always said that cowards are people that wear masks during demonstrations. You want to know the difference between a protester and a criminal? Martin Luther King was a protester. He was a big believer in non-violent demonstration. Civil disobedience. Do not hurt other people. Yeah, you can get loud and scream, but the second you resort to violence, you can expect yourself to be met with force. Because guess what? Left to their own devices, these people will burn down Minneapolis. We saw this in 1992 with the Rodney King riots. Until the National Guard was mobilized and more force was brought in, not lethal force, Los Angeles was in bedlam perpetually. And yes, even H.W. Bush brought in the National Guard. So you should be angry and you should be unsettled about the chaos that's happening right now in America. It should make you feel upset with your country that your fellow citizens would act like this. It should make you equally upset with your politicians that do nothing. Our president is standing by our law enforcement officers. Because guess what? I've talked to over 100 police officers through email and digital communication, text messages over the last couple days. I know a lot in my life, retired and active, and all of them are disgusted by what this individual, Derek Chauvin, did in Minneapolis. There are forces that are trying to divide us. There are people that are trying to spark these race riots, and the media is covering for them. Well, guess what? White America and Black America are actually on the same page on this. This is media concocted. Activist media concocted. The same way that they created hysteria around the Chinese coronavirus. In just a second here, I am going to air the second part of our exclusive conversation with Rob McCoy, where we ask the question, how should Christians handle situations similar to this? How should we as Christians interact with our government? Is it right for Christians to run for office? Should you believe in God in general is a question that we get into. And there was another piece of late breaking news that segues perfectly into my conversation with Rob McCoy. And before I mention it, please email me, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. But the Supreme Court just ruled 5-4 against a California church, similar to the one that Rob McCoy is the senior pastor of, that challenged Gavin Newsom's unconstitutional public gathering restrictions. Supreme Court, not the California Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court. John Roberts, a Bush appointee, the final decision was 5-4, and Roberts sided with the anti-American leftist Marxist justices of Sotomayor, Kagan, Breyer, and Ginsburg. And Roberts agreed with them and sided with them. Amazing how John Roberts, the George W. Bush appointee, has been on the wrong side of so many consequential decisions for our country, the most famous being the Obamacare decision back in 2012, the summer of 2012. And so now we have here Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Alito, Thomas, that were in the minority opinion. Gorsuch and Kavanaugh are Trump-appointed justices. Boy, if you want a super clear contrast between Bush-style big government governance and MAGA doctrine-style Trump governance, look at this decision. Where Christians want to go back to church and the Supreme Court, our United States Supreme Court, says no, and a Bush-appointed justice, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, John Roberts, sides with the anti-American, leftist, secular, Marxist justices, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Breyer. It says a lot. It says everything you need to know about establishment Republican politics, the direction that we should never go again. You guys are going to love this conversation with Rob McCoy. I think you're going to be really blessed by it. There's a lot of information shared. This guy is an activist pastor in the public square who loves his country, loves the kingdom of Jesus Christ, and fights for what is right and for what is true every single day. And he's also the former mayor of Thousand Oaks, a mayor pastor, a patriot, an activist, someone that we should all look up to. Buckle up, everybody. I think you're really going to enjoy it.
So, Rob, something you hear all the time, separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what we need. That's what we have.
I agree. We need to keep the state out of the church. But not the church out of the state. That was never intended.
But does it say anywhere in the Constitution separation of church and state?
No. The only thing it has is a letter written by Jefferson to the Danbury Baptist Convention where he says an invisible wall of separation. And what he was stating is there isn't going to be one denomination that's going to run this.
But that was a single president's opinion.
Single president's opinion. But they
that
use
wasn't
it
for, a Supreme Court justice.
Yep.
That wasn't a ruling by the third branch of government.
Up until the 40s, it was always interpreted very clearly. Until the 40s, they called it the Establishment Clause, and they booted religion out of the public square. It was never intended to be that way.
However, the lack of Christianity and the lack of religion is a religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's leftism.
Yeah.
They have unified belief.
Yep.
They're fervent in their advancement of it.
Mm-hmm.
They are committed towards making sure that we cannot pray, cannot exercise, cannot talk. The Ronald Reagan's son goes on television with the Atheist Commission. You've seen these advertisements.
Yep.
And he says, we need freedom from religion.
Yep.
Nowhere does that say
nowhere.
That in the Constitution. Now, I think we have to get better. We have to get better. When we say unconstitutional, what we should be saying is immoral. Because what is constitutional is moral.
Right.
Because it is a moral document.
It is.
And when we say unconstitutional,
I think it's divinely inspired, but others will disagree with me. I don't hold it to Scripture.
Can I ask you about that?
Yep.
I've said that before.
And you've gotten beaten up.
Because they say, doesn't it say in Revelation that...
I'm not speaking in relation to Scripture.
Can you help me through that?
Yeah. When I say divinely inspired, I'm not saying it's not without error. I mean, you wouldn't have a 3/5 clause, you know, where
sure.
But the...
Or any document that allowed abortion or slavery.
Yeah, or slavery. So I'm not saying it's without error as I believe the Scriptures to be in their original form.
Flawless.
Yeah.
Right.
But what I would say is... These founders were driven to search a way to come up with a form of governance that would allow man to have access to God and thus be able to live together because they'd be accountable to God and accountable to each other, where power wants to concentrate and then you want to hold
diffuse.
That over others.
Yeah.
Whereas God wants us to be free, and freedom comes. Freedom is having choices. Liberty is different, but freedom is having choices.
Can you tell us the difference between freedom and liberty?
Yeah. So I love Bob McEwen's illustration, Congressman McEwen. He says freedom, Thomas Jefferson said.
We're going to have him on the podcast. He's terrific.
He's unbelievable. So if you get $100 in your paycheck and you go to a restaurant where everything on the menu is $100 or less, you have complete freedom to purchase anything on the menu. But as you go out to open up your paycheck, you realize the government's taken 25% of it, or you already cash it out and a robber comes up and puts a gun to your head and takes 25%. Same result, regardless of who's doing it, and some would consider both criminals. So you have 25% less choices, thus you have 25% less freedom. If they take 50% of it, if they take it all, you're a slave. So that's this idea of freedom. You want more choices. And the bigger the government is, the less freedom we have because they're going to rule in all these things. You can't go to the beach. You can't use a skate park. You can't come out of your house. That's not freedom. Liberty is different. Liberty is this idea, and the Apostle Paul wrote this in Galatians. He said, stand fast, therefore, in the liberty for which Christ has set you free.
Also in 1 Corinthians 4:13, he says, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty.
There's liberty. In both cases, when he wrote that, he wrote it from prison.
Hmm.
Liberty is doing what's right, standing upon these principles. So when the Continental Army was going through a pandemic, a smallpox pandemic, which was very, very vicious.
And it was unbelievably lethal.
Very lethal. And And it was – and the British were immune to it. They'd already been through that. They'd been immune
to
it.
They had herd immunity.
They had herd immunity. And Washington was looking and saying, well – first of all, they did inoculation, so you still felt the sickness. It still put you down, and the entire Continental Army would have to be inoculated. You'd lose 2-3%, and the families would be affected. And that wasn't even to defend liberty. That was just to be able to fight to secure liberty for generations to come. And here we are today, and we have a virus that has less than a 2% death rate.
If that, it's much lower.
Yeah, and we are willing to surrender all that liberty.
Mm-hmm.
For what they're saying is safety. and security, which is neither, and we're giving away these rights, government's not going to give them back. You can vote yourself into socialism, but you can only shoot your way out. I don't think people realize what they have. And the one entity, the one segment of culture that really needs to understand this and proclaim it is the church. That's why Paul said, steadfast, therefore, in the liberty for which Christ has set you free, in a prison. And that handful of people turned the world right side up and started this experiment in liberty that established what we have today.
Hmm.
And we're going to let that go away?
People ask me, they say, well, what's the difference? If you had to make, you have a very quick difference between Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. I say, well, let's look at the root terms, first of all. Israel means one who wrestles with God, constantly questioning. If you look at a community that's more into cross-examination and skepticism, it's the rabbinical community. They're trained to do it, right? Wrestling with God, questioning God. Islam, submit, right? You got to follow these rules every single day. The idea of Allah, a lot different than the idea of the Christian God or Jesus Christ. Christianity, liberation. Liberation from sin.
Mm-hmm.
Liberation from bondage. And finally being liberated from this absence of God to finally get to eternal life with Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. When you have that belief of liberation and liberty, it all of a sudden makes this whole experiment a lot easier.
You gave a perfect segue to the previous question you asked me that I didn't define completely. And by adding this segment to it, I hope this helps. You asked the difference between freedom and liberty. Freedom is having choices, but I didn't quite define liberty for you. And this is pretty fantastic. If we are anarchists, we think freedom is no government, no constraints. That doesn't work. Liberty is different. And that's why we have the law. The law comes in and you go, wait a minute, how can you have freedom with the law? And this is where liberty comes in. In the stairwell of the law school at Harvard, it's a quote from a 1912 commencement graduation that they employ every graduation. It says, the law is the wise restraints that make men free. So the idea in Western culture, Judeo-Christian culture, is you apply restraints towards evil, those things that are the lowest common denominator that destroy you. That's why we don't sell alcohol within 100 yards of a school, you know, those kind of things. We don't want child porn or pornography exposed to our children. We put these rules in so that they can be educated. You apply restraints towards evil in order to pursue excellence. So, you're a Bears fan.
It's very
struggling.
It's a struggling existence.
Maybe it's not a good illustration. Let's go to
Cubs.
Let's do this. Let's go to the Super Bowl with Mahomes.
I was pulling for the Niners. I grew up with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Fair enough. But Mahomes had a great game.
One of the most unbelievable performances.
Now, while he was playing that Super Bowl, I was sitting in a chair not unlike this, a little more comfortable, with a big bowl of potato chips and a large Coke and this belly that I have come to accomplish. And I have suggestions for how he should do and what he should do, and I'm the armchair quarterback. But the reality is Patrick Mahomes is enjoying football at a level of excellence I'll never be able to obtain because he applied restraints. Instead of sitting on a cushy chair and eating potato chips, he was out practicing. And now he has the liberty to enjoy life at the highest level imaginable with creativity and abundance instead of a debased, lost, crushed. Humanity rises when we apply restraints in order to achieve what God always intended, the creativity and design. In America, when that liberty is established, when morality is placed, and we put restraints towards evil in order for our children to pursue excellence, then we end up with a nation that represents 3% of the entirety of the world's population. We don't have nearly the natural resources South America has, or even Canada. But we have more symphonies, more patents, more Nobel Peace Prize winners. We've accumulated more wealth.
18 of 20 of the top research institutions in the world.
In the history of the world. And it's not because of the land. It's because of the liberty. When men are free from themselves, the sin that so easily besets them, and free to pursue excellence as God has created us, and operating in that context, the sky's the limit.
Discipline is liberty.
Yeah.
Getting in shape doesn't have to be about losing a specific amount of weight or a magic number on the scale. It's about building healthier habits and feeling better about yourself. If fitting into that favorite pair of jeans is your goal, great. But there are many reasons you might want to practice self-care, and every person is different. You might want to be able to run a marathon. You might just want to lose 10 or 15 pounds. Noom, N-O-O-M, is the way to do that because everyone is different. Noom adjusts your lifestyle. They teach you psychology behind the decisions you make and then help you keep track of everything from workouts and steps to analyzing your diet and recommending healthy recipes. Noom also connects you with a personally assigned goal specialist and a community of other Noomers. So you have all the support you need to empower your change. There's physical, psychological, and social ways to get this done. Better self-care, feeling confident in clothing, more energy, or just an overall better feel about yourself. You can integrate Noom into your life. You trust yourself to make good choices. There's specific lessons you learned about psychology or habits, the ease of just 10 minutes a day. They will help you get your goals done. Noom is the habit-changing solution that helps users learn to develop a new relationship with food through personalized courses. It's based in psychology. Noom teaches you why you do the things you do and empowers you with the tools you need to break bad habits and replace them with better ones. No food is good or bad or off limits. Noom teaches moderation and can be used in conjunction with many pre-existing popular diets if you want. Noom doesn't tell you what to do and what not to do. It teaches you how to look inside your own mind and make better decisions for yourself. Chat with your goal specialist and Noom community to get and give help to people going the same things. You don't have to change it all in one day. Small steps make big progress. Sign up for your trial today. Noom.com/Charlie. Noom.com/Charlie. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/Charlie to start your free trial today. That's Noom.com/Charlie.
People ask all the time, they say, well, Charlie, how do you achieve success? How do you get to that next level?
Oh, Jordan Peterson, so good. And I love how you incorporate it from the Christian perspective. Charlie, share that, please.
I hope I can recount.
Oh, you do so good at it.
I hope you recount what you're talking about.
Well, Jack Hibbs' church, when you shared it there, you just nailed it with that young man.
Oh, yeah. That was a fun clip.
That was precious.
And it went totally viral, by the way.
I know.
Millions and millions.
And it should have. It was epic.
Where I fully admit our immigration laws are screwed up. Student loans are crushing young people. The tech companies are out to get you if you're a conservative. You're inundated in a broken and horrible culture. All of those things.
And add to it that he was a male, which is
– He was a male.
Lowest on the food chain.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get harassed for whatever
sure.
thing you do.
And you could tell he was not having a good go at it.
No.
And we actually got some information after that he was struggling with the deepest, darkest demons a human being can struggle. That's all we'll say.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't need to divulge anything more than that. But we sensed there was something with this young man. All of that could be summed up into one of the things the Buddhists got right, which is life is suffering. First universal Buddhist principle, life is suffering. Guess what? Christians have that agreement with them.
Yeah.
We do. At least this earthly dominion is suffering.
And we have reason for it and it works out.
Of course. Yeah. But we actually have a really good reason for it because it wasn't originally suffering. We chose the suffering. We actually invited the suffering into a perfect thing that God created. So I said to this young man, and what I say to young people all the time is, all of that is true. So now what? Are you going to participate in this exercise of life? Because if you are, there's very simple the things you can do. Be the best person you could possibly be right now. There are three things you are doing right now that you are either addicted to, quasi-addicted to, or spend way too much time with that you have to liberate yourself from. Get it? Liberty.
Liberty.
Drop. Discipline. You might be drinking too much. You might be doing too much drugs. You might be looking at things on your phone you're not supposed to be looking at. You might be on social media sites you're not supposed to be on. You might be gossiping. You might be leaving.
Fill in the blank.
I'm only saying examples because some listeners might be resonating with them as
course.
I'm saying that, right?
Yeah.
Drop three of them if you can. Drop one if you can. When I mean drop, liberate yourself from it. Discipline is freedom. Jesus says if your arm causes you to sin, cut it off.
Be careful because they're going to think that like President Trump, you inject yourself with disinfectant.
Okay. Well,
that was figured.
Can I have some pastoral theological backing for what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I'm in agreement with you, but don't cut off your arm. This is hyperbole. So go ahead.
It is. It's metaphorical.
Yeah, metaphorical.
Point is that you actually have the power to be
That's
able
right.
to do that. You do. One of the greatest things I have at Turning Point USA, the greatest fulfillment is, yes, we are a secular chartered organization. But we have brought more people to Christ than some ministries that I've come across. And I'm not attacking those ministries.
I know you aren't. But and for those who would say, you know, that you don't have this Christian angle, I'm here to testify to all my pastoral brothers. This is an amazing ministry.
Thank you.
People come to Christ. It's awesome.
And I've seen action change. I believe, not all Christians believe this, but most really fervent Bible-believing Christians do. I believe God cares how we act. I really do. And I've seen action change where people say, Charlie, I was really drinking too much. I've gone 3 months without drinking. It's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, I used to be addicted to this, or I used to be that, or I'm going back to church again. And it's this belief that you can actually be the best possible version of yourself if you apply yourself correctly.
Right.
And you are actually in total control of that. And that's the most liberating thing to finally believe.
You don't have to wake up every day going, I'm a victim.
No.
You say, okay, those are all stacked against
me. But you have to honestly admit all of the external demons outside and as soon as you wake up.
And that's even a concept of the 12-step program.
Completely.
But this is the secret to what God is doing with Turning Point. And this is where I want to segue. I want to transition because it's critical. Because I don't know if my brothers out there in the pastoral community understand the significance of this ministry. You say to someone, you don't have to do that anymore. And that's true. But the Apostle Paul said, those things that I want to do, that I know are good for me, I don't do those. And those things I don't want to do that are bad for me, those I do. Oh, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? There are times where we have said, I swear to God, I'll never do that again. And you do it again. And you make a New Year's resolution and you break it. And we get crushed and we get crushed and we get crushed. You want that. But you have to make decisions and surround yourself in a realm where you're going to apply that. And here's the secret. If the culture isn't established to help you stay away from that, then you're on your own in a dying culture. But here's the beauty of it. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Philippians 4:13.
And you admit you're helpless in that regard. But what you do, Charlie, is for everyone in life, there's a bunch of things what we're going to do. But the secret is, why do we do it?
Mm.
Everyone has a what. But there's the why. Oftentimes, I do this because, you know, I'm pursuing success because I want to outwork my brother and I want to prove that I'm better than him. Well, that's your why. And that breaks down over time and it gets weird. Yeah, revenge, that's a why for people. But the highest why of all is what our founders understood. His glory.
Yeah.
To recognize who you are. And now you've stepped into this stream of liberty and you want this liberty. You want to be liberated from this bondage of the person you despise and you want to elevate.
You want to ascend.
You want to ascend. And you start to see, wait a minute, this law that we see in Galatians 3 that we saw 430 years after Abraham, this Levitical and the Decalogue of the Ten Commandments, Paul says in Galatians 3, the law is a school teacher, a really good school teacher. To point us to Christ and to keep us protected until faith comes. So if you establish a culture where people can see there's consequences to your actions and you don't enable people and give them drugs and allow them to sleep in the streets and there's doing good and feeling good. Politicians think that this is doing good. No, that's feeling good. It didn't cost you anything and you're killing them.
They're virtue signaling.
Doing good is the hard thing. Doing good is establishing so that people are protected until faith comes.
Mm-hmm.
And that is pointing them to Christ. And only can we contend in culture to establish those kind of principles where babies are protected, where children are educated, where the individuality of man is understood. We have to contend at every level. And that's why the church needs to engage in the civic arena. We need to reach out.
You know, I have a couple thoughts on this. And it's so important. I want to zero in on a couple of it because there's so much wisdom there. One, we as Christians and conservatives, liberty-believing individuals, we say you want to change the world, change yourself. And the question that has always befuddled every society is how do we create good people? So it starts with young people, starts with children. So it used to be where we used to teach young people, America is great and you're the problem.
Yep.
Now we say, you're great. America's the problem. You want to change the world? Go pick up a sign and go protest the climate. You want to change? We have more activists coming out of younger schools than ever before.
Yeah.
Where we don't have moral, ethical, good people. Guess what? That creates miserable people.
Yeah.
If you're always protesting something, you're going to be miserable. You're going to blame other people for your problems. The gateway to Marxism. And there's no contentment. You'll see suicide on the upswing. You'll see criminality rampant. There's no fulfillment. There's no wisdom. There's no end to any of that. That's number one. Number two, you brought me to something else, which is what does drive people? What drives you? I'm getting one of the things I think I've most enjoyed ever watching.
Yeah.
Is this Jordan documentary? Have you watched this?
I have.
I was born in 1993, so I was born in the third Jordan championship. I love basketball. I grew up playing it. I pray one day I can play again. Once I get my back all figured out,
I'll work on that for you.
Thank you. I need it. Concert violinists talk about how they love just playing the violin. I love playing basketball. It's just, yeah. It makes sense to me. And so I love this Jordan documentary because in some ways, when they talk about, yeah, Jordan never went to sleep and he was just so obsessed with success and he was always competitive. In a lot of ways, I can sympathize with that. I'm like, I get that. Where you just, I am going to be the best at this and I will outwork you. However, that won't bring you fulfillment.
Mm-mm.
And the Jordan documentary actually shows you that.
That's right.
That's not going to get you where you need to go. Now, you can use that as motivation and you shouldn't clamp it or stamp it out. But until you surrender everything, you're going to end up like Jordan in 93. He's like, I quit.
Yep.
I'm done.
Yep.
I'm going to walk away from all this.
You think about Michael Phelps wins more gold medals than any other Olympian in history. And then you see him, you know, taking a big bong hit, you know.
And how did that happen?
Yeah, the letdown from I have achieved the pinnacle. Now what? There's more to life than baubles and trinkets, and you have to know the why. If the why is motivated to be better than Mark Spitz, okay, you did it. Now what? Now it's depression and suicide. But if you understand that we're on this earth for this dash, which is on every tombstone, year of your birth, year of your death, and the dash. That dash, you're going to stand before God and give an accounting of your life. Live in such a way as to not have any regrets when you move on. And leave the place better than you found it. Our founders operated by pledging their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor, not for themselves, but for generations to come. They were planting trees of whose shade they would never know. And that's when a culture grows great. And that only comes through selflessness. But we have created a culture of selfishness. And Tytler, the Scottish historian, talks about the Tytler cycle. Bondage to freedom, freedom to abundance, abundance to apathy, apathy to complacency, complacency to dependence, dependence to bondage. And how do you break that cycle of a republic that falls into bondage once again? And that's where Oz Guinness, fascinatingly enough, and Eric Metaxas, you see this triangle of freedom, faith, virtue, freedom. You insert that and it brings people back to an understanding that this liberty is too valuable. I want that freedom, but it's going to come with virtue. I need to know what's right and I got to have faith in God to do it that way. And that's where we find life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
You talk about Aristotelian happiness?
Yeah.
I've heard you talk about it before.
Yeah. So the idea of happiness, especially even if we look at the Hebrew understanding, the word eshed, it's in Psalm 1. It says blessed, and it's translated, oh, how happy. Happy is a man who does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stand in the way of sinners, nor sit in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and upon that he meditates day and night. He'll be like a tree planted by streams of living water that produces its fruit in season, whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does will prosper. Not so the wicked. They're like chaff that the wind blows away. Your life ends up having matter, meaning, weight, substance, carries on for generations. Your names are on buildings. Any donkey can knock down a barn door, but only a carpenter can build one. And you're building things to last because you have a mindset that you're going to stand before God and you're going to leave something better than you found it. We want that instilled. And happiness is this idea of being aligned with the laws of nature and nature's God and doing it in such a way that people are free, that they can pursue liberty and establish that for generations to come.
Hmm.
That's America. Why isn't this declared more from the pulpits of our nation?
Well, and I find that, and I know you're more careful than I am, but so many of these churches have become social justice minded and left wing minded where they're not declaring it because they're either afraid of what other people are going to say about them, or they dive into leftism because they have a misinterpretation of theology and scripture, or just most alarmingly, they think that the church should be completely absent from every single one of these issues.
Yeah. You know, and throughout all the years of recorded history that the church has existed, it's had some ups and it's had some downs. And there's been good sides of it and bad sides of it. And it's got a strange personality to it. And my wife would say that of me, and I'd say that of my wife in 30 years of marriage. Currently, right now, it has been hypnotized to understand and think itself a business. The PPP loans. Churches lined up in droves to receive the PPP loans, and yet do they see themselves as a business? Last time I checked, we're Levites, and we live off the faithfulness of God's people by faith. But if we're applying for a PPP loan, okay, that's understandable. But why aren't you standing for liberty? And they say, well, no, the PPP loan, they're going to protect our First Amendment. We still get to preach the gospel. Really? Because they're not doing it now, and you're still not concerned. And so it kind of reveals itself. Mm-hmm. And then the church has to take a good look at itself and say, well, you know what, maybe not. And 77% of Americans, when polled, they'd say, I don't think the church is essential, and it really shouldn't be open during a pandemic. Well, that's kind of telling. That people look at the church and say, you know what, you really, other than collecting tithes and money and having cool music on a Sunday and people raising their hand and feeling good, I don't really see your relevance. And even the church sometimes says, well, maybe we just should stay on a live stream. So I think we have to take a hard look at ourselves and say, really, are we the ones who are to infuse and move culture so that we can establish forms of government and defend them so people can be free? Because right now, people were using, well, look what the church did in Wuhan. Well, now that church in China is getting shut down, and they're closing it, and they don't get live streams or access to the internet anymore. They're done. And we're called to proclaim that voice, no matter what the expense. The Apostle Paul says, having put on the full armor of God, having done all, then stand. It's time to stand.
Do you owe money for student loan debt? Are you being crushed by the cartel of the colleges? Do you have a grandson, granddaughter, son or daughter that do not know what they are going to do with their student loan debt? It's just keeping them up at night. Well, guess what? There is a path forward. It's called Credible.com. It's an online marketplace that gets you pre-qualified student loan refinancing rates from up to 10 different lenders. They are a shopping market to get you out of debt. They help people get out of student loan debt, and if you've got student loan debt, you could benefit. With a lower rate, you could save on interest and lower your monthly payment. It's cash in your pocket, money in your pocket. With a shorter loan term, you could get debt-free faster. Consolidate all your student loan bills in one place. Credible customers have given awesome reviews about how much better their lives have been after refinancing their student loans. On Credible, you see actual pre-qualified rates from up to 10 different lenders, whereas at some other marketplaces, you only get a range of rates or ballpark estimates. Guess what? It only takes a couple minutes to check rates. You can get a student loan debt. Again, if you have student loan debt, why are you not going to Credible.com? It's the way to get out. Checking rates does not impact your credit. They'll never sell your data, so you won't receive spam and phone calls from dozens of lenders. So please visit Credible.com/Charlie. That's Credible.com/Charlie. When you refinance your student loans, using this link, they'll give you a $200 gift card. That's Credible.com/Charlie. Credible.com/Charlie.
And I want to kind of zero in now on this, the virus, as we're coming out of it.
Yeah.
And as this is disclosed after, you know, we record this, as this is aired after we record this, we're trying to make this a little bit timeless. But the lessons will be timeless, what we're going to talk about right now. My biggest disappointment from this entire thing has been, out of nowhere, we repostured our programming as citizens to all of a sudden act as if the state and the government need to protect us at all costs. That individual responsibility, that our own self-awareness of what's happening gets completely thrown away. That all of a sudden we never had the freedom before not to leave our home. You could stay at home. So disappointing for me to see that kind of devolution. And frustrating too, because I'm afraid we used a Tomahawk missile to kill a mouse.
Mm.
Now, does a Tomahawk missile kill a mouse? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But it also kills a lot more than a mouse too.
My illustration was, the patient has a nosebleed and we've tied a tourniquet around their neck to stop the nose from bleeding.
Right. And they can't breathe.
Yeah. That's Foster's line.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. So I guess there's been some positive and optimism that's come out of this. But more than anything else, I'm worried. So I'm worried that now we have demonstrated how far the state can go, how little people will fight back. And I think part of this, some of these Democrat leaders wanted to push until those protests started. They wanted to know where the line was.
Does that shock you? I mean, this has been going on for...
Shock me because...
But I'm saying it's been going on since the Garden of Eden. Evil doesn't sleep. And the enemy is he roams
constantly conspiring.
He roams about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. He comes to steal, kill, and destroy. This isn't shocking to us. I would say what's more shocking to me is I'm sitting across from what I consider to be one of the greatest optimists I've ever met. You looked at a sea of young people that embraced socialism, and you would step on a campus and be obliterated by people just attacking you verbally, and you would stand your ground and lovingly continue, and you watch this movement grow. And what it started to do is to reveal to all of the folks on that campus, wait a minute, there's something about this. And they start to come. Love hopes all things. My God is bigger than this problem. Mm-hmm. And I know your God is too, because we serve the same God. None of this caught him by surprise. I almost think it's a gift from him. Because he's saying to us, look at yourself. Look at what you're willing to submit to. The church has to take a really hard look at itself. And this is going to be a time where we're either going to rise to the occasion and people will be drawn to it. And that's why I brought up the surfers and the skateboarders, because they're the Stephen to Saul. Saul's holding the cloak while they're stoning Stephen.
And remember, two chapters later, Saul becomes Paul, and all of a sudden...
Well, he's always been Saul. They interchange that. It's not like his name... But yeah, you're right. He becomes this... He's the last guy they would ever pick to be the apostle. They picked Matthias.
I mean that more of a character transformation.
Right. They picked Matthias. We never hear from him again. This was the guy who's supposed to be the apostle. He wasn't ready yet, but it was Stephen who inspired him. The churches are called by God. They're not ready yet, but the skaters and the surfers are inspiring them. Because liberty is a valuable thing to proclaim and to stand upon and to instruct. So we're going to reevaluate our lives and our teaching.
Do you know what I love about the surfers and skaters, about that whole thing?
Tell me.
There's a cost to those two activities.
Yep.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
Really dangerous, actually. And what they're saying is, no, we know we could break our arm skating. We understand that we could get a concussion. We know we could be eaten by a shark, unlikely, but still, that's a possibility.
Yeah.
It's happened.
Yeah.
We know that we could suffocate and drown. We know that we could lose our orientation. Mm-hmm. We know that we could come up and hit a rock. All the things you could happen. Let us do that because it's worth it for us.
Yeah. Personal responsibility.
Bingo. And what has been so upsetting to me is that we as conservatives, we do this all the time. We defend freedom and liberty all the time. And I use this example, and you've heard me say this before. But after a school shooting, after the Baseline shooting, you and I go on cable television, we go on social media, and we go to our families and friends. And this is a hard argument.
It is.
And we do it a lot.
Yep.
And we've done it a lot in recent years. We did it after San Bernardino. We did it after the Parkland shooting. We did it after the Virginia Tech shooting, after the Northern Illinois shooting. We did it after Columbine. I could name a lot of them where we said unspeakable horror, unspeakable evil. But for those of you that want to take the Second Amendment right away and you say 32,000 gun deaths a year, no, because the benefit of the liberty of having to be able to own a firearm far supersedes the downside of it.
Yep.
We do that all the time. And that involves death, that involves liberty, that involves choices, that involves all the things that we were dealing with here. But as soon as something that is not involving a tangible firearm, we as conservatives say, well, no, we got to retreat, got to just... wait this one out. These are the same people that wanted to take your guns away. The same people that were happy that Easter Sunday was closed in the churches.
Yeah.
And it is the greatest attack on religious liberty in American history. Not just religious liberty, all liberty. That's why I like the skaters. And because it would be one thing if it was the nuns, right? I get that. In some ways it would be better, in some ways it would be worse. But the cost and the price of being a nun, okay, they go, they do what they do. But no, skating and surf, they're like, let us go hurt ourselves, because the chances are, if you lined up all the skaters and surfers in a lineup, right? Let's say 100 of them, right outside your church.
Yeah.
Percentage odds are that two of them will end up in the hospital by the end of the day. It's just the way it is, right? Yeah. Yet they say, still, we're good. Let's do it.
We love it.
We love it. This is why we do what we do.
Yeah.
And isn't that the whole idea of our country?
It's a nation built on freedom and liberty.
Because there's a cost to that.
There is.
And you know what's so great
about personal responsibility.
But you know what's so great about freedom and liberty? I'm never going to surf or skate. You're not forcing me to do that.
No.
Just like we don't have to force you to leave your home. We don't have to force you to
stay
in the car.
Yeah. You stay locked down. You wrap yourself in bubble wrap.
You could be perpetually locked down.
Do it.
Why are you making me stay in my home?
Yeah. Yeah. That's not the way we work. You know, my mother-in-law, she has COPD. And imploring her, don't come to these events. Don't do this. And she says, I'm coming. Because the liberty that I'm defending for my children and my grandchildren far exceeds any concern I have of contracting this. The government is called to defend the liberties given to me by God. I'm responsible for my own health care. I don't need the government to do that for me. That's a brilliant statement from this woman, but brave. And I think all of us would take note in regards to that, that, you know, a government big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take everything you have. You know that. And they're using this to tell us we're going to be safe. If we flatten the curve, if the hospitals aren't overwhelmed, and they just keep adding to it, and it just stretches out until they see what they can take.
Well, now the new one is, well, once we stop the spread, that means never.
Never. Yeah, and until we've done all testing and see who has the antibodies, and then you get the card and you get to go in. I'm done with this.
I'm not getting the card and I'm not getting a vaccine. Yeah. That is not happening.
Ain't going to happen.
Well, and people say, well, they say, well, you need a medical ID card. I can't have a voter ID card?
Yeah, yeah.
All of a sudden, you're perfectly cool with everyone having medical ID cards.
Yeah.
But with voter ID, it's completely outrageous and out of the question.
People have to wake up because there is risk in life. But certainly nothing is worth losing your liberty over. Nothing. If the enemy can isolate and then indoctrinate and censor the truth, the scripture says you'll know the truth will set you free.
Free.
Free. But you're going to be enslaved because they promise you safety and security. The government, they stink at that. They failed in every aspect of it.
And yet, the models were wrong.
Yeah.
The advice was wrong.
I
and we don't say this at all as a criticism of President Trump. We're both huge President Trump supporters.
Absolutely.
We're going after Democrat governors and just some of the advisors and people that we don't have to name any names. But I just want to make sure we make that nuance clear.
And in all fairness, because I'm in a state where there's – you know, I served with Democrats as a city councilman, our county supervisors, some of them professing Democrats. Regardless of the partisanship of it, I know that they're left with heavy decisions to make and you're getting conflicting evidence. And early on, they saw this and they saw that model and all these other things and they were scrambling. But when we had the empirical data presented and they still stayed the course, that's when I knew, okay, this isn't about the health. This is about power.
Well, but even if it was about the health, what about the suicide curve that is up? What about alcoholism that is up? I mean, I read this on one of previous episodes of the Charlie Kirk Show where I said, I don't even know how they got this one statistic. Cocaine prices have gone up. I don't know how they got that one. But weed consumption up 120%. Alcoholism up
25%. Well, it's 150%.
Depends where it is.
Yeah.
But is this a good thing for our country? Of course not.
No.
And you are going to see undetected tumors result into cancer deaths that will spike, that will far, far outweigh the virus. A million people a year die of cancer-related virus. Cancer-related death. That's how it is. Million, more or less. It's right near there. We save lives that are not calculated in that because of biopsies that are now not happening.
Right.
Because people are terrified of getting this virus if they go to the hospital.
Yeah. And laid off medical workers. Our hospitals are not even prepared right now. The approach that they took is devastating. And it's going to be that way for months to come. And my prayer is that we recover. My prayer is through this, we've started – you don't realize what you had until you lost it. And I pray Americans awaken to the great privilege of liberty and now come out of this realizing I'm never losing this again, because we're going to see the cost for when you trust government to shut down the greatest economy on the face of the earth and devastate the nation and the world. And they were wrong.
So to wrap this up, you being a pastor, we have a lot of young people listening to this. Could you just give some applicable life advice to young people you talk to? Because we have a lot of young people searching for answers. There's a lot of young people listening to this podcast that are confused, and not just about the virus and all this, but just life.
Yeah.
You've seen and heard it all.
Fascinating about this generation, especially if this year as we look at high school seniors.
You have a son.
I do. And it's a fascinating generation because he was born on 9/11, just a little bit before 9/11. So the greatest tragedy befalling America in modern history, and all of a sudden everything in America changes, you know, security and fight against terrorism and the whole dynamic of America changes. He'll never know that world that you and I grew up knowing.
I had 8 years in that world.
Yeah.
Eight good years.
Yeah. And then you get to where we are today, and here he is his senior year, and his entire year is shut down over this.
And that's not insignificant.
Not insignificant. This is critical.
This is generational destruction.
Generational destruction. Very good way to put it. And so you look at this group of young people who have gone to school, whether they've gone to a private or public or even homeschooled, and in most cases in public school, there's no hope. They have survived Greta Thunberg and everyone else saying that the world's going to end, the world's going to end, the world. This is my eighth time around hearing the world's going to end. They live in a dystopian nightmare of no hope.
That's such a great point. What an awful time it is to be
awful.
A teenager.
Because this is what they're infusing. There's no.
This is why all the other awful things are increasing. Because if the world's going to end, yeah, sure, okay, I'll go do the worst thing you could do.
Yeah. Well, add to this. Think about it. The task that they carry as young people, the only way they're going to be able to save the planet is to do something no government can. We can't even stop a virus yet. We're going to stop global warming? Really? And now they're trying to do by all the rules that the government says, and they're still not allowed to leave their house. So here's a generation of people, just like in 68, they're going to be disillusioned with government and authority, and they're struggling, and they're empty, and they're tired of being depressed. And along comes a guy, you, inspired by the why, which is the Lord Jesus, me. And I want to say to that entire generation of young people, the reason why I'm so moved by you at 55, Charlie, you being 26, is because you've stepped in to a world of hopelessness. And you have presented to this entire generation hope because they can see a form of government that's hopeful. They can see themselves as instruments of that hope. And as they step into that stream of realizing their lives matter, that law, those laws of nature, nature's God, they step into that stream, it empowers them, and then it points them, it keeps them, it points them to Christ. And they go, I love this life, there's more to it, and then their eyes open. There's no judgment.
Life sweetens after that.
It does. And Christians out there are going to judge you because you've got folks that are drinking, and you've got folks that are homosexuals, and they're going to throw that at you. This isn't a religious 501c3.
No.
Everyone's welcome. And the tent of the laws of nature and nature's God are open to everybody. And you welcome them on every campus. You don't care where they've come or what they're doing. Just come and examine this and see if it works for a future that makes sense to you. And then all of a sudden...
And I argue, isn't that what Christ
it
did?
It is, yeah.
He would go to the public square with the people you're not supposed to be talking to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he would witness to them, and he would talk to them.
And he would be candid. Look, you're welcome under this tent, but you and I fervently disagree, and we're going to contend when we get further up this food chain, when we're going to contend for issues. But right now, let's swim together in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty remarkable thing because people's eyes open to how these laws of nature and nature's God work.
Well, there's order there.
There's order.
And so—
And it points them to the one who designed it.
I'm still thinking the best way to articulate this, and I'll find it as I get older. But I see the order, something like math. It's not an accident. Algebra, equations, percentages. I refuse to believe all this was just, we just so happened to be able to have parabolas and triangles and quadratic equations to explain how to create superstructures or to measure time or to be able to look and examine evidence or DNA so that we could live longer and have – that's a mistake? And so there's order to all that. And just like there's order to nature, that, by the way, even the atheists admit there's order to nature.
Yeah.
There are hierarchies. right? There are dominance hierarchies. They would argue a Darwinian process to it. We would at least acknowledge there's adaptation. That's a pretty well acknowledged Christian scientific belief that we do have the ability to adapt to our surroundings. All of this order has almost a harmony to it. The same can be said for human action, though, that if you choose to sin, you actually choose to suffer. You look at those 10 rules, right? The downloaded moral app that you talk about.
Yep.
I say this to young people all the time, and they don't get this advice. Go do all 10 right now and come back to me and tell me you're happy. Go.
Yeah.
You got a free pass. If I gave you a free pass right now and you could go kill somebody, you could go steal, you could go covet, you could go cheat, you could do all that 10 stuff and go tell me that you are content right now. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'd say, well, why don't you do it? Because these are the temptations that you're going to get. There's obviously more than that, but those 10 are pretty awfully good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you're not obeying your parents if you're doing those things, all those sorts of things, right? No, because God actually gave you those rules because he loved you. Because he knows if you followed them against your nature, which tells you not to do it, right? Because we're broken by nature.
Right.
You're actually going to be more content and more fulfilled. That's the great irony of the whole thing. It's not – God didn't give it to you so you could be miserable.
No, he's not a cosmic killjoy.
But that's the way it's portrayed, and that's the way it's far too often communicated.
I had commented about the disappearance of moral knowledge, and that's not new to me. That Dallas Willard, he taught philosophy at USC, Dr. Dallas Willard. He wrote the book Disappearance of Moral Knowledge. And when we remove it from our culture, we just devolve. We just fall apart. And we need rules to live by. And the community is established, and we start to – and I love this. This is where Aristotle said there's a thinking virtue and a doing virtue. A doing virtue is I wake up in the morning, I'm hungry, and I love cold pizza, so I eat it. Well, that's a carb load, and I'm at 55, and I don't burn it off because I don't exercise. And if I ever feel an urge to exercise, if I lay down, it goes away. But cold pizza is not good for me. But the thinking virtue is I love the taste of it. It's easily accessible. Let's pound that thing. The thinking virtue is, wait a minute, you're 55. You don't need the carb load. You do a high protein. Get something with a little energy that'll carry you through lunch. Limit your carb intake because you want to be here longer for your family. You want to be able to have your mind clear so you can study. And it's always other-centered and stretched out for serving people. That's the thinking and the doing. One is driven by our base, lowest nature. And the other is elevated by liberty to pursue excellence. And that's where a culture flourishes. And that's where we want to get to. We want our kids to flourish.
Yeah.
But we have to apply restraints in these areas.
I think that's such an important point. Human flourishing is something Christ did talk about. Parable of the talents,
yep.
Multiplication. It
yep.
is a repeated theme of his parables, his miracles, and his teachings, where he said multiplication is a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about aspirational, the improvement of the self towards Christ is something that we should try to aspire to. And you look at what is the one thing that has increased more than anything else in the last 10 years. What is the absolute opposite of ascending towards aspiration? Suicide.
Yep.
It is literally the complete and total admission and termination of all aspiration, all virtue, by definitionally, right? And what's so incredible is that our country is one of the highest suicide rates for young people in the entire world, higher than even people that live in third world countries in absolute and total poverty. That and that alone should dispel all the materialist Marxist arguments, right?
Right.
Because all this stuff
doesn't do you any good.
It doesn't do any. Well, it doesn't do any good to be able to give you contentment.
No.
Or
it can buy a house but not a home, a bed but not sleep. It can buy sex but not love. I mean, money and you become like that which you worship. And if you worship money, you just become cold and lifeless. And our greatest success is hidden in him. When we come to know our designer, our creator, in him is the fullness of joy. We've been created in his image. Come, let us make man in our image. We're relational. We're to dwell together. We're to encourage one another. He gave us love. And he showed us mercy and grace and all these concepts. But this is a higher level that he desires us to enjoy on an earth. Now, there's sin here. Sin is sin nature.
And sin is distance and absence of God.
And it's us wanting to be our own God. And the wages of sin is death. And sin is pleasurable for a season, but the end therein is death. And the way of the transgressor is hard. So a life lived for yourself You may surround yourself with baubles and trinkets, but you've just accumulated a pile of dirt, and you still go home lonely and angry and miserable and unsatisfied. And what are you going to do? And there's not enough antidepressants to take. And then one day you just realize, you know what? I'm a trichotomy, body, soul, and I'm missing my spirit. And that's where God makes you a complete human. Because everything points to that. Everything points to that. And God's waiting. You're in a fallen world. You're going to need me to establish the order so that the spirit tells the soul what the body's to do instead of you just running around with your doing virtues, eating cold pizza in the morning, getting fat.
Yes.
You're going to rise to a level of excellence.
And that's the optimistic tone I try to take with young people.
And you do a great job.
Is that every single person listening to this podcast or watching this video has been given an unbelievable gift. You might not have found it yet. You don't think it exists. That's not true. And follow your talent before you follow your passion. Find something you're good at.
Yeah.
And then you'll find something that you're passionate about. Because passion doesn't always lead to talent. Those
nope.
things are not
no.
necessarily no, directly
yeah,
created,
exactly
correlated.
Right.
And if you work, if you decide that you are going to work harder than somebody else and apply yourself and hold yourself to a higher standard, guess what? That can compensate for any sort of loss of proficiency or talent that you don't have. Now, if you want to be Bach, you want to be Beethoven, or if you want to be Michael Jordan, that is the rare intersection of natural born talent and rage to master over a very specific period of time in right place and right time. That is so hard. But if you want to be really good at something, you don't even need the optimal form of talent, Gene. You don't need the talent. You just need to find something that you're above average at. Something, anything.
Yeah.
And every person listening to this podcast has that.
I would add too that, you know, passion isn't everything, but I would say this. The Bible says, delight yourself in the Lord, and He'll give you the desires of your heart. And the secret is, when you delight yourself in the Lord, His desires become your desires. You start to see the world the way in which you'll flourish. You understand that a gentle answer turns away wrath. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. If you want to be great in the kingdom of God, be a servant of all. You apply these principles, and next thing you know, you have friends. Next thing you know, you have purpose. You're aligned with your creator. And it really isn't what you do, because whatever you're going to do, you're going to do it as unto Him. Whatever you do, do as unto the glory of God. And it changes everything. But I love the fact that you give people an opportunity to really stretch and see that there's a higher calling.
One of the greatest things a human being can do is empowerment.
That's right. And you do that every day with these young people.
God willing.
And I walk through the headquarters here at Turning Point. I am blown away by the young people I meet.
Oh, thank you.
At 55, I think, man, I got gypped. Why wasn't there a Turning Point when I was growing up?
That's very kind of you.
But it's true. And you bless me, Charlie. And so does everyone at Turning Point.
Thank you. Church is Calvary Chapel, Thousand Oaks. If anyone
yeah, Godspeak Calvary by. Chapel. Yeah. The website's godspeak.com.
Yeah, if you want to send a note to Rob, you can email it to me. I'll pass it along. freedom@charliekirk.com. Any other thoughts, Rob?
You know what, Charlie? I think that this combination of what you're doing and where the nation is I truly believe going to be an awakening and a revival. The awakening to the principles of liberty that will open people's eyes up to the one who gives us that liberty.
I think the liberty giver.
The liberty giver. And they'll be drawn to Him. As Christ has lifted up, all men will be drawn unto Him. You just keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
I want everyone to know how significant this is. And any of my Christian brothers and sisters who question this, you don't know this man, you need to examine it. You gotta really endeavor to know before you come to a judgment. I can tell you right now, I will testify on behalf as a pastor that this man loves Jesus.
Thank you.
And you contend for the gospel every day, and you love the lost.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I pray I can live up to that.
Just keep your eyes on Him, you'll do fine.
Misstep here and there, but yeah. Hopefully we'll do
His that. Grace is sufficient.
Everyone, you can email us freedom@charliekirk.com. Rob will be back on the podcast. We have some other projects we're working on as well. And if you guys want to help support his church, you can do that. And Rob, it's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Charlie. It's a blessing being with you.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Please email me freedom@charliekirk.com. Type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast, hit subscribe, and leave us those 5-star reviews. And for the first 10 people that subscribe and leave us 5-star reviews, the first 10 people that do that, I will give a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine to you. Just prove that you have given a review and you've given us a 5-star rating and subscribe. Signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine for the first 10 people that do that. God bless you. Have a blessed week, everybody. We have some huge episodes coming up, including an exclusive interview with Candace Owens. Stay tuned. Stay subscribed. God bless.